It's time for Football Friday with Bill Savage, presented by Boyd's Royal Knight on Government Boulevard in Mobile, featuring $8 weekday lunch specials, analysis and insights, the winners, the losers. Get ready for the weekend with Football Friday on FM Talk 106.5.
And it is a Football Friday. I just want to make one reference. Thank you, Kane, that we will through at Coastal Traffic on Twitter. Keep you up to date, because with visitation starting for Officer Tudor starting at 9 this morning at Dauphin Way Baptist, that starts at 9. You have the funeral to follow, and then the procession leading through there will go through some pretty big intersections like McGregor, Azalea, and Airport down to 90 that will be causing some traffic issues. Do take that into account today, but we'll keep getting you the information through the 9, 10, 11 o'clock hour, and of course during Midday Mobile today. All right, it is Football Friday, and great to talk to our friend, General Manager of the Arizona Hotshots, analyst extraordinaire from the world of football, everything from Pop Warner to pro, and the host of the podcast Football Philosophy, and yes, author of Fourth and Go Every Day. Y'all say hello to Phil Savage. Hey, man.
Well, good morning, Sean. Hope you and Dalton are well here during Senior Bowl week, and I'm still on the Riverwalk in San Antonio. This is our final Friday in San Antonio.
Explain that to folks, because they're like, wait a second, you're supposed to be in Arizona. Why are you in San Antonio?
Yeah, they brought all eight teams of the Alliance to San Antonio for training camp, so we're scattered across the city. Everyone has their own hotel, their own practice facility. There's been a number of joint practices out here between the teams. We went against Orlando a week or so ago. And Sunday and Monday, not for the public, but in the Alamo Dome, there will be four preseason games, 1 o'clock, 7 o'clock on Sunday, and then 1 o'clock and 7 o'clock on Monday. It's sort of a dress rehearsal for the league. Our broadcast partner, CBS, all the technology, the GPS technology that's going to be used in the players' pads, all of that's going to get a dry run Sunday and Monday. And, oh, by the way, our players will be on the field competing against each other. And we have to go from 75 players, which is where we are right now, down to 52. So there's 23 guys that are going to go out the door at each of these respective teams. And I can tell you guys, I talked to our squad about this 2 days ago. There is a palpable anxiety, anxiousness amongst our players, because they know what the inevitability is that 23 of these 75 are going to disappear on Tuesday. And so it's an emotional time for this group of players, not only with the Hotshots, but really across the entire league.
A lot on the line for those players this week and weekend, Phil, and a lot on the line for a lot of seniors in college football, many of whom I'm sure will end up playing in the Alliance of American Football. But it is Senior Bowl week down here, and you did such a fantastic job as the executive director for 6 years down here in Mobile. And before that, of course, your history in the NFL as GM and as a scout, you know all about scouting a lot of these players. I want to get your opinion of the Senior Bowl quarterbacks we have down this week. Just to name a few, you got Drew Locke, of course, Auburn's Jarrett Stidham, Daniel Jones, who rose a lot over the course of the year from Duke. Which quarterbacks do you think will project to be better and make it into that next level in the NFL?
You know, I had a chance to see Daniel Jones from Duke a year ago on video. Duke played Northwestern, and he really played exceptionally well. And so last fall, I actually went to Duke and checked on Daniel Jones. I was there to see another player, but David Cutcliffe is a longtime friend of mine, that's the coach for the Blue Devils, and we talked about Daniel and, you know, the idea of him perhaps being a fourth-year graduate and coming to the Senior Bowl, and that's ultimately what happened. But Daniel Jones has the height, he's got the athletic ability, the mobility, the arm strength. He doesn't have a rocket arm, but he's got a good enough arm, and he's got the pedigree in terms of the coaching that he's received from Cut at Duke. So I'm expecting him to be somebody that will really get the once over this week here at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, throughout the pre-draft run-up. But I'm expecting him to be probably the highest draft pick of the collection of quarterbacks that are there. I think Drew Locke, from Missouri because of his raw arm talent would be another guy that the league will be interested in, because he can throw the ball to all parts of the field. And, you know, as I've watched some of this from afar, it appears that he's had a pretty decent week down there. But I tell you, all these quarterbacks, it's such an important step for them, because, you know, everybody knows their jersey number and their stats and their attributes physically. But this is the first time that the NFL people have actually got to sit down and talk to these quarterbacks personally. And, you know, on Friday of Senior Bowl week, I'm assuming they're going to do the same thing. But we would swap teams on Friday with the coaching staffs. And a few years ago, the Cowboys were coaching the North. And on Friday afternoon, they got a chance to sit down with a quarterback by the name of Dak Prescott. And in a 15, 20-minute interview, they were wowed. They were taken back by Dak's personality, and that was really the trigger that got them going in terms of trying to acquire him. And ultimately, they picked him in the fourth round, and now he's their starter and probably on the verge of getting a very lucrative contract from the Dallas Cowboys. So this is an important week, not only on the field, but maybe even more so off the field for these players.
Yeah, it can really be life-changing for some of these guys. We got to talk about those wild NFL Conference Championship games from last Sunday. First, we've been talking about it all week. Your thoughts on the non-call heard around the country. Of course, referees swallowing their whistles on an obvious call against Rams cornerback Nickell Robey-Coleman. How do you feel about the league's response, and what should have been done in that Saints loss to L.A.?
Yeah, it was maybe the worst non-call in the history of major football, especially in a huge moment that has Super Bowl implications. I know that, you know, the Saints in particular, the players and their staff got to be sick, because, you know, there's nothing guaranteed in the NFL in terms of their return to this level. Drew Brees is an older quarterback. You just don't know if you can get to that point again. The Saints had everything in place at home. But, you know, the reality of it is in sports, they had many, many opportunities in that game for it to go a different direction. I mean, a 13-0 lead at home, really it should never have come down to a call like that. It did, unfortunately. I think at times, just like in the NBA, in the NFL, I think they, quote, let them play. But that wasn't even a let them play type of situation. That was a horrific job of coverage by Nickell Robey, and, you know, on top of that, it was a helmet-to-helmet contact, and, it's an egregious error. There's got to be a way to fix it. My first thought when all of it was going is that, you know, the coach should at least be, if everything's not reviewable, okay, I get that, because you don't want the games to last 4 hours, okay, so that's fine, but give the coach the ability to challenge any potential, any call or non-call. And in this case, I think this was easily fixable through replay, but unfortunately, it was not allowed. And I think they'll look at it. I don't know that they'll change it, but I do think there's a way that they could perhaps change the reviewability in the last few minutes of a game, to expand it to all plays, maybe in the last 4 minutes of a game, and or give the coach the ability to challenge any play rather than just that finite group of plays that are challengeable right now.
It'll be interesting to see how the league addresses it this offseason. As far as the other game, in fourth and goal every day, of course, you talk a lot about the genius of Nick Saban, but because of his past, specifically with you and Coach Bill Belichick in Cleveland, you talk a lot about Patriots coach Bill Belichick. Now, he and Tom Brady headed to their ninth Super Bowl together, their third year in a row they've headed to the Super Bowl after beating Kansas City in overtime. How do they keep getting it done, Phil?
Guys, I can tell you that one Super Bowl is the thrill of a lifetime. Nine is absolutely absurd. I mean, nine Super Bowls, they've made it as if it's just a rite of passage, like there's nobody else in the AFC that really belongs or gets a chance to go to that game. But what Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have done as a coach and quarterback for two decades, it'll never be duplicated again, just like what's happened in Tuscaloosa under Nick Saban. This will never happen again. 100 years from now, maybe, if there's even the sport of football. That's a whole different conversation. But I just don't see another organization being able to duplicate what these two have achieved. I noticed yesterday one of my counterparts on Sirius XM, Mark Packer, he put a stat out there on his show that the Patriots have 2 5-star recruits in their starting lineup, and the average recruiting ranking for their team is 2.9 stars.
Wow.
So coaching truly matters. Bill Belichick, somebody asked me, one of the players asked me here, hey, what would Coach Belichick be like if he was an Alliance coach? And I said, well, first of all, he would be so hands-on, he would coach virtually every position on the field in a technique, from a technique standpoint. And not every coach in America can do that, but he knows the minute details of every position. And then he's able to make something very complicated simple for the players. Hey, if they do this, you do that. If they do that, you do this. And he's been able to create these players that were passed over or given up on or what have you throughout his career and maximize their ability. It's been an amazing thing to see. And, you know, the way for them to win that game in Kansas City, and I think we talked about this last week, was to try to run the ball and then also to play a form of keep away. And they had the ultimate game of keep away in the overtime when they went down and scored with their one possession, and that obviously ended the game with Patrick Mahomes, the electric Patrick Mahomes, never getting a chance to even touch the football in overtime.
Phil, as always, we love looking at these games through your eyes, and remind folks, too, football's not over with the Super Bowl. More football to come.
Yeah, we've got 2 teams left in the NFL. The North and South for the Senior Bowl, and these 8 Alliance teams. So there's only 12 of us on the practice field right now. And after Super Bowl Sunday, there will only be 8. And we all get started February 9th and 10th for the Hot Shots. We open up on Sunday the 10th against the Salt Lake Stallions. And all of these games are going to be found on CBS, CBS Sports Network, and then there will be a streaming app available. So all 40 regular season games will be available to fans across the country.
Well, we'll talk about it again before that game. Phil, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us.
Guys, enjoy the weekend. Happy Senior Bowl Saturday to you. Hope you get great weather for that. And we'll catch you up next Friday.
Will do. Phil Savage and Football Friday right here at FM Talk 106.5, brought to you by Boyd's Royal Knight. Bob Constantini from Westwood One joins us next, talking about the Roger Stone arrest from earlier this morning. Hey, thank you, Kane. 822 FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings on this Friday. And yeah, just less than an hour from right now, the visitation for slain Mobile police officer Sean Tudor begins at Dolphin Way Baptist, and then we'll have the procession after that. We'll talk about that in the second half of the hour, where the procession goes if you want to be lining the streets to show your appreciation and love for the Tudor family. We'll talk about that route coming up in just a little bit. And the big story from national news this morning is a raid that went on in the early hours in Fort Lauderdale, raiding the home of Roger Stone. Joining us now, White House correspondent with Westwood One, Bob Constantini, to talk more about it. Bob, thanks for your time.
Good morning to all of you. And this was the pre-dawn hours that the FBI raided Roger Stone's house down there in Fort Lauderdale. He'll appear in federal court in a couple of hours, I understand, to answer to these charges or be, you know, read the charges against him. There are 7 counts in the indictment brought by Robert Mueller from a grand jury. 5 of them have to do with making false statements to the House Intelligence Committee when Stone testified to them behind closed doors. Another one deals with witness tampering, and we can get into that in a moment. Yeah. But as of now, Stone, the highest or closest person, I guess, to the Trump campaign in a sense, directly indicted. He was an unofficial advisor to the campaign, as long expected to be indicted, by the way, because of his alleged contacts with, as the indictment says, a go-between who had information of what WikiLeaks was going to be releasing in the weeks leading up to Election Day, guys.
Yeah, Bob, I guess it wasn't a surprise to Roger Stone, who had been saying he expected to be arrested. So he obviously
It seemed to be a surprise to him that they came knocking this out that hour of the morning in the dark. Someone, and this is going to be an issue, I suppose, someone tipped off either CNN or a camera person down there, because CNN has footage of the FBI agents in their tactical gear fanning out in front of his house and knocking on the door and announcing themselves as FBI agents. So the way it was at least conducted certainly may have been a surprise to Roger Stone.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear more on this, how the CNN had people there at the same time of law enforcement getting there. Seems like there's some big questions and where that leak would have come from to give that information. Bob, what about, you mentioned the raid early this morning. I thought this was similar, like the Manafort raid. Both of those raids are early morning, you know, FBI at the door kind of thing.
It's perhaps indicative of the concern that Stone in the House, and again, I'm grasping here in a bit, that Stone may very well have had something in the House, either on a computer or some kind of information, some kind of evidence that they wanted, that they felt could be destroyed, deleted, whatever, if he had contacted his lawyer and said, he's about to be indicted. Let's have him turn himself in quietly, and then we can process him and everything else. This raid was carried out for some particular reason, I would think, the way it was handled, guys.
I'm talking to Bob Costantini from Westwood One, White House correspondent. Take us back to 2016, as this is all hinging off 2016. And I think most of us remember, there was a WikiLeaks document dump and Democrat emails. But as the story is being laid out this morning, Roger Stone's capacity in that was what?
Yeah, look, it wasn't a document dump. It was a steady stream of piecemeal disclosures, and that's where it becomes important in this indictment. The indictment says, quote, senior Trump campaign officials had contacts with Roger Stone, and in one instance, at least, it was initiated by one senior Trump campaign official about what Stone could tell them, that information that he had in the indictment that says came from a go-between with WikiLeaks, about what information Stone could provide them regarding the stream of leaks, or a stream of disclosures, I should say, about hacked emails that were coming from WikiLeaks. I realize this sounds kind of confusing, but I want to be very exact with what I say here. Stone could provide the campaign, perhaps, with information about what was coming from WikiLeaks. And Stone himself, by the way, should be pointed out, if you guys remember, Stone himself gained notoriety by putting out a tweet that said Don Podesta's time in the barrel, that's the words he used, would be coming. And a few days later, WikiLeaks started revealing hacked emails from John Podesta's account. Podesta was the campaign chairman for Hillary Clinton. So that's kind of where the scenario that this indictment sets. However, it's important to point out that these are unnamed senior Trump campaign officials, and specifically, of course, it does not name then-candidate Donald Trump as having been someone who talked to Stone about what he could tell them regarding what WikiLeaks was eventually going to release. And the indictment itself, the charges have to do with Stone's testimony to the House Intelligence Committee. And also, here's where it gets really interesting, really kind of cute, or however you want to say, that he urged an associate to pull a Frank Pentangeli when he would testify before the House Committee. And all your listeners probably wouldn't necessarily know Frank Pentangeli is a character from Godfather 2,
yes.
Who was set to testify in an open congressional hearing against Michael Corleone.
Yeah.
But when his brother was brought into the hearing room by the Corleone family, Pentangeli suddenly lost all his memory about what he was going to say.
Well, we know Roger Stone's no shrinking violet. We know about the Nixon tattoo. We know about the fact that he raised his hand and said he was likely the unnamed individual in the DOJ election hacking indictment. I mean, this morning, though, we're hearing from Secretary Sanders, Press Secretary Sanders. She's come out saying, quote, this does not have anything to do with the president. Yeah. It does not have anything to do with the White House. That tweet going out 6 minutes ago from CBS News. What's next? What can the American people expect, you think?
Well, that's why, Kelly, it's important to point out that the president, you know, Donald Trump was not specifically named in this this indictment, because that does allow Sarah Sanders to, as she said, she's been saying to news organizations also today on camera, to say this has nothing to do with the president, this has nothing to do with the White House, it has to do with that individual person. That's going to be the company line today. And I've just checked, the president has not tweeted any response to this. But it does get relatively close, in a sense, an indirect link between the Trump campaign, if you want to say that that Stone was still associated with the Trump campaign in 2016. It's an indirect link between the Trump campaign via WikiLeaks and the disclosures that WikiLeaks made that federal investigators have long said came from Russian hackers. All right, I hope I'm clear about that. I'm trying to make sure I'm very specific about what I say.
Sure, and Bob, we appreciate the update and reminded folks the timeline for today, the arrest made, but coming up this morning in a courtroom in South Florida?
In Fort Lauderdale, yes. He will be appearing in federal court in maybe an hour or so, from what I understand.
All right. White House correspondent with Westwood One News, Bob Costantini, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
All right,
you.
We'll do. Bye-bye. Laid this update there from the story that has so many people talking. And we're coming right back.
836 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Dalton, how you doing? Frankie at Starbucks wants to say hello to everybody.
Hey, Frankie.
Hey, everyone.
That is great.
You can tell I'm not at the dealership. I'm at Starbucks.
Yeah. Well, you got to get fueled up for a great day on the lot at McConnell Automotive. Hey, this is Senior Bowl weekend. Lots of tailgates will be down in the Ladd Peebles Stadium parking lot. Speaking of tailgates, that tailgate on that new Sierra AT4 looks hot, Mitch.
Yeah, I want everybody listening to maybe Google the new GMC commercial where they're singing the na-na-na-na, hey, goodbye. And it's a bunch of people carrying Ford tailgates because, listen, nothing out there compares this GMC tailgate. Don, it's so funny you mentioned that. It's a perfect intro. And in 5 or 10 seconds, I'll just say that it does about everything except make your coffee in the morning. So it's something Chevy doesn't have. Nobody's got it. And the new AT4 is that bad boy version, like the Raptor and a Ford. And I just want to invite everybody, compare it. Before you buy a new truck, you kind of owe it to yourself. Come to McConnell Automotive. Check the truck out. The tailgate's just one of the cool things, Dalton. But we're excited about it. And, man, nobody has seen it that hadn't been blown away.
All right. Thank you, Mitch. Have a great day.
Y'all have a great weekend, Dalton.
Check out McConnellAutomotive.com and make sure you go see Mitch and the crew at McConnell Automotive. You can find them on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
All right. What is, by the way, side note, what's your Senior Bowl plan?
Senior Bowl plan, my plan will be to get here early in the morning,
right,
do prep sports report with Rick Cleveland, Mark Laster, and Corey LeBounty. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the Senior Bowl. Then I'm going to head over and do a little bit of tailgating.
All right, very good. Kelly, what is your plan? Tailgating?
No, I'm more into being in the press box and learning all I can about the players.
What if you just brought the Weber grill up there to the press box?
No, I'm good. And then after the game, I like to interview people because sports is my passion.
Always working, not tailgating.
I think if you have the access like we do, you have to kind of earn your keep.
There you go. All right. For
what will you be doing?
I would be points north. Points north. But I will be there in spirit.
Uh-huh.
All right. I put a link up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5 to direct you over. Maybe one step too many. I'm being a middleman here on this, or you could just go over to Ben Rains' feed or go to AL.com and look for Ben Rains to see about your take on the underwater forest and should it receive protection. And the man behind that story and a lot of stories about the underwater forest, our buddy Ben Rains, joins us now. Hey, Ben.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. So I guess let's hit the rewind button for a second and set the stage, because you're asking people to go online and vote about giving this marine sanctuary protection to the underwater forest off the Alabama coast, but there may still be some folks that don't know what we're talking about.
Right. So we're talking about this incredible natural wonder that was discovered off the Alabama coast, which is a 70,000-year-old cypress forest from two ice ages back that is still there on the bottom of the Gulf, just as if the trees were growing today. They're still rooted in the mud they were growing in. It's a whole ecosystem frozen in time. A lot of new science is happening still. I was talking to the lead scientist yesterday, and they actually have now discovered there's a layer of peat 27 feet thick. And so they're saying they may have a forest record going back 20,000 years, like 20,000 years worth of trees, rather than just the initial snapshot we found.
Give us the quick version. Yeah, give us a quick version for why the heck there's a forest that's 10 miles off the beach.
Well, sea levels rise and fall. As we're hearing now, we keep hearing about rising sea levels. Well, they were 300 feet lower in the previous ice ages. So we had an ice age about 12,000 years ago when Dauphin Island would have been like a mountain towering over the horizon. Mobile Bay would have been a river valley with a river meandering through the middle, and the delta would have been offshore in the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow.
And as the seas rise and fall, the delta and Mobile Bay would just move back and forth, further offshore, and then retreat back up into, you know, the woods. So like the Sepulga River, you know, you go back to these ice ages and further back in time when we were in warming times, the Sepulga River area was underwater. All of Alabama was once under the ocean.
That's how
so
you can
really
find shark.
Fascinating.
You'd be up in the Sepulga and find shark's teeth, you know, which
is
kind of a strange thing. So, okay, this underwater forest now, and people can check out the documentary. There's been obviously a lot of screenings where people could go watch it on the big screen, but they can also watch it by going online, right?
Right now, yeah. If it's on YouTube, you type in the underwater forest, it's the first thing that pops up. We've got a story up on AL.com right now announcing this poll where we're trying to get people to weigh in on whether the forest should be protected or not, and there's actually a link to the documentary in that story, in addition to the poll. So if you scroll down toward the lower in the story, there's the documentary. But the first thing they'll hit is the poll. And so what the poll is, to have something declared a marine sanctuary, it turns out is very complicated. I've been in the process now for 5 years with the forest. We almost got there, but then a lawsuit by the oil industry stopped the new consideration of sites to be added to the sanctuary list in the Gulf. And, you know, it was unfortunate the forest got wrapped up in that, and because otherwise, you know, it was kind of a no-brainer. Everybody was in favor of protecting it. And then this lawsuit happened and torpedoed all the new areas they were hoping to add. So now we're trying to get the forest declared a sanctuary all on its own, as a standalone sanctuary. It'd be the only one in the eastern part of the Gulf of Mexico. The next closest one is in Texas. So Alabama would have its own marine sanctuary right off our shores. And what we're talking about is different from most of the marine sanctuaries. Fishing and scuba diving would still be allowed in this one. And scuba diving's allowed in all of them, I think. But fishing is not allowed in a lot of the marine sanctuaries. This one, it would be allowed. The only thing that would be protected would be the trees, and people would not be allowed to remove the trees. That's what we're worried about.
Yeah, we need to talk about that, and more like I give it the land-based version here, more like a national forest than a national park. You could still have consumptive activities like fishing going on while protecting the trees. And if people don't dive and didn't take that, you know, when they got to taking their dive certification years ago and learned about the rules of the sea and salvage rights, that's the scary thing, right?
Right. So because this is not in state waters, Alabama has no control over what happens to it. It's in federal waters, and there are essentially no rules that protect removing wood from the bottom of the seafloor. Because in most cases, if you found wood out in the ocean, it'd be an old dock or something like that. There's no rule for an old forest. nobody's ever encountered this before. Alabama actually has the only one of these in the world, the only spot where an ice age forest has been revealed. And not just an ice age forest, this is an ice age two ice ages back, 70,000 years ago. We know almost nothing about climate change from that period. All the records we're looking at, for the most part, to try and judge greenhouse gases and all that, come from the most recent ice age 10,000 years ago. So this is a whole different ice age when actually the planet changed really quickly. Sea level was rising and falling at a staggering rate, you know, 100 feet in 1,000 years. 100 feet, think about that.
Wow.
and as much as 8 feet in a 100-year period.
And remind folks, too, they're saying the forest, the key is, you've got cypress there, this ancient cypress forest, and if people think back, let's just go short history, what a sinker cypress log that's 100 years old, 150 years old is worth on the market out there, and now you take something that's how old, Ben?
70,000 years.
70,000 years.
The value would be really, really high.
Right.
And the wood is still intact. It's not like you could take a piece of it and build a house with it. You know, it would have to be treated in various chemical ways to make it sturdy enough to build something out of, like a coffee table.
Or a guitar.
Yeah. Exactly. The technology, though, is there. And these companies, you know, well, they tried to pay me money to reveal the location so they could go do exactly what we're talking about.
And that's the scary thing, because if it's done like that and people take salvage rights and go get it, and there's a motivation to do it, I see that. But then, you know, that history and obviously the scientific part of it, and just a guy like me who likes to scuba dive, going down there and putting my hand on a piece of cypress that's that old, that's gone.
Yeah, and you know, you have to look at this for what it is. It's a natural wonder. It's like the Grand Canyon. It's like Yellowstone National Park. You know, this is an incredibly rare thing on Earth. There's only one. And when you swim down there, you're swimming among all these tree stumps. You can see the knees around the cypress trees. There are fish everywhere. You're in this weird fairy world. You know, it's like you're swimming with these dinosaurs. It's really cool. If we're able to open it to the public, which is the whole point of having it declared a sanctuary, is so it's protected from salvage, we would reveal the location to the public at that point. People could go down there and experience this. You know, it would become a huge tourism driver for Alabama. We would have the only spot on Earth where you could go dive a prehistoric forest.
Pretty incredible. All right. Remind folks once again, they want to watch the documentary on the underwater forest, get the education there, and take part in this vote, which I want to say, good for you. You have, this is why, like, down-home folks do down-home polls. This is something you probably wouldn't get from somebody nationally who doesn't get it. I mean, you give us choices, not just to protect it, but to protect it and still be able to fish and dive and those kind of things.
Right. And you know, the cool thing in the poll, it's almost unanimous to protect it. I think there are one or two votes against protecting it at all. Then there's a lot of debate about the fishing issue, which I was surprised by. A number of people don't want fishing to go on there. Personally, I don't think there's anything that catching a fish at that spot could do to harm it.
Right.
It is swarming with life, and I'm all in favor of people being able to fish there. I just want the trees protected so people can go dive it and not, you know, not have the thing destroyed.
And what are you going to do with our votes? What are you going to use?
Well, so Bradley Byrne, the way the whole sanctuary process works, you can go through this long process, which we've been trying to do for years, or a member of Congress can actually make a bill in the House, and it can get passed as a sanctuary that way. So we're trying to encourage Bradley Byrne to do just that, to help Alabama, you know, secure the only natural underwater forest on Earth and make it a public park where people can go and enjoy it. So if you know Bradley, if he's your congressman, give him a call, let him know how you feel. Vote in our poll. The results are going to be spread that way. AL.com is also going to have a Facebook and a Twitter poll going in addition to the poll in the story. So we're going to try and wrap in as many people as we can to get a real feel for the public response. You know, I know that Bradley Byrne was badly burned with the whole Delta thing about making a national park there. I don't see this as the same at all. People would still be able to fish. They'd still be able to dive, and this thing would be protected. It's just a win-win all around.
Ben, as always, we appreciate what you're doing out there, and I'll check back with you next week on this story.
All right, great. Thanks, Sean.
Hey, thank you. Ben Rains, check it in.
Enjoy your trip to Points North.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Ben. Our buddy Ben, check it in. AL.com, you can see that link also on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. 8:48, we're coming right back. Thanks, Kane. 852 FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings, Friday style. Hey, last night at Cut and Chill Package, they had a great event with New Belgium Brewing for us craft beer fans. If you like the vino, they're taking care of you tonight at Cut and Chill Package, corner of Cut and Chill and Hillcrest. Another one of their great tasting events, and this is with Jackie from Alabama Crown Distributing. Going to be featuring fine wines from Z. Alexander Brown's Uncaged Wine Series out of Napa, California, including their Chardonnay, their Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, their proprietary red blend, and their Banffy Rosa Regale sparkling red. So you can sample those tonight. And lucky for us, they've got probably bottles that we can purchase at Cut and Chill Package. And the cool thing is, whether it be a six-pack of craft beer or a bottle of wine, you want to try something new. You want to, I think I might like that wine. I might like that beer. But you don't want to buy it and end up not liking it. That's why these events are so cool. You can come out and take a little sample, taste it. And then if you don't like it, then you go on to the next one. If you love it, then you can pick up a bottle or a six-pack while you're there. And while you're there, speaking of which, get your old favorites. They've got a great selection, whether it be craft beer, fine spirits, wines, or if you're a cigar aficionado, the humidor that's measured in square footage, like almost like, well, probably bigger than my first. This humidor is bigger than my first apartment out there, and it has a selection of thousands of cigars, and it's so big it actually has your own tour guide, your park ranger, and that's Billy. He's the tobacconist, can walk you through, explain the cigars, why this one's, you know, maybe more to your liking than another one. He can walk you through all that, and if you're buying gifts for somebody who loves cigars, he is a great, great source of information. Check him out, Cottage Hill Package, corner of Cottage Hill and Hill. Crest online at cottagehillpackage.com, or make sure to like them on Facebook or see them out there tonight for this wine tasting with Alabama Crown Distributing. Let me quickly hear, unnamed texter said, now that the blanket of sand is removed, will the forest still be preserved or protected, or will start to deteriorate? And I can, number one, tell you to go watch the documentary, Underwater Forest. That's addressed, but I can give you a little sneak preview. Number one, cypress is more resilient to breaking down. That's why we use it in marine applications, anywhere near water. That's one of the great things. But, yeah, sure, when you're 70,000 years old, it's a real deal. And this texture asks a good question, because you remove the sand, you bring oxygen in the mix, you start the breakdown process and hastening it. Yes, it does break it down. But what Ben has described out there to me over the years on this is there's so big of an area that as storms, what happened is this forest was found when maybe it was Ivan or one of the storms had uncovered enough sand. It's just like on the beach where we'll have a shipwreck shows up and then it disappears and shows up and disappears. Same thing going on offshore. And he said, Sean, there's a lot more. So if this part of the forest gets exposed right now and it starts the breakdown process, which is a real thing, another part will be exposed later by shifting sands. So, yeah, there is a breakdown process going on out there as it's exposed. And, hey, it might get covered back up for a year or two and then exposed again. So, but go watch the documentary. All that stuff's addressed.
We learned so much on this show. This is brilliant.
It's
pretty fast.
It's 70,000-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean,
people,
I don't care about no tree stumps. Tree stumps are stupid. 70,000-year-old. Cypress stumps.
Cypress stump could talk.
10 miles offshore, and you have a cypress forest in the stump.
It's huge.
I think it's a big deal.
Can I share something with you really quickly?
Sure.
We talk about service animals and, you know, on planes and everything. This story here. Here's the story. A gator that caters. A Pennsylvania man says his emotional support alligator named Wally helps him deal with his depression. He says the reptile likes to snuggle and give hugs.
Sure he does.
Aww.
Isn't that sweet?
Wally.
That's a Friday story for you.
Snuggling alligator?
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah, right. So if you see Wally,
yeah,
just so you know.
All right.
Yeah, he's 5 foot long alligator.
It snuggles.
Yeah. All right. Emotional All right. support. Alligator.
Yes.
Gator that caters.
It's too much. It's too much for
he
me.
He says he's just like a dog. He wants
yeah, they're
to
just
be
like
loved
a dog.
And petted.
Sure, they're just like a dog.
They're just
this is what happens in our society. Oh, I've got a so-and-so. You know, I want to get a badger.
Yeah.
Oh,
this
wait,
is a friendly
better.
Badger. The badger attacks him because that's what badgers
well,
do.
Well, he takes Wally out for meet and greets at places like senior centers and minor league baseball games.
the first grandparent or child that loses a finger here for Wally.
Wally is 4 this year. He's a big teddy bear.
He is an alligator.
He's like a dog, but you are what you eat, right?
He's an alligator.
The alligator has never bitten anyone and is even afraid of cats.
Yet. No, it's a con that he's afraid of cats. That's to get the cat close enough to get chomped. This is what I'm telling you right now. Listen, people want to have exotic pets. Okay, they want to have exotic pets. And then you get these stories where something happens and people are like, I didn't know it would happen. The gator's not being bad. The gator's being an alligator.
But
it's
this
just
person,
doing gator things.
This person does have a background in with the outdoors. He hosted a show called Joey Henney's Outdoors on ESPN Outdoors from 1989 to the year 2000. Okay.
All right.
Okay. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
Emotional support alligator. I've never heard of that before.
Would, at some point, although Delta and other airlines have shut this stuff down, the first time we have, and you talk about a viral video, one of those emotional support pigs or ponies on a flight, and then the emotional support alligator attacks it, and it's bringing it down there in the you know in the aisle, wrestling it down, and the pig's squealing. Then you'll have a video to go viral.
I'm going to tweet this out at Kelly K2K Finley. You will smile. Wally is just wonderful.
About the size of a nice handbag, too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And a belt and a wallet.
Yeah, get some good stuff there. All right, we'll see you all again on Monday morning.
Have a great Friday.
All right, we're back at noon today for Midday Mobile, and we will be following the coverage of the procession for the slain Mobile police officer, Sean Tudor. All that coming up.